Hello, everyone. Welcome this afternoon to Fight Colorectal Cancer's monthly patient webinar series called Alphabet Soup, Making Sense of KRAS, BRAF, what those terms stand for, and all sorts of other tumor testing options. This webinar is made possible thanks to the generous support of Amgen Oncology, and obviously the content of this webinar has been medically reviewed. Bear with us just one second. So tonight's speaker is today's speaker is Dr. Kathy Ng. I will do an introduction of her in just a second. My name is Kim Ryan. I am Director of Patient Information Services for Fight Colorectal Cancer. For those people who weren't able to tune in tonight and maybe know some other people who are with us today and want to just listen to the webinar in the future, we do archive them there at fightcolorectalcancer.org/webinars. And we do really appreciate, we're going to send you a follow-up survey after the webinar, and we really appreciate your feedback. So if you could take a few moments and fill out that survey, and we will be sure and send you a Blue Star of Hope pin when you do that. So we're going to move through things really quickly today, and we already have a lot of questions. So I'm going to put it up there right now that if we don't get to your question, we do promise you an answer. Dr. Ng is a very busy physician, and our time is limited today, but we promise to get you as many questions today answered, and then we will send some information out in the future to address any questions we didn't get to. And then also you can call our Fight Colorectal Cancer answer line there at 877-427-2111. So it is my great pleasure to introduce Dr. Kathy Ng. Dr. Ng is an associate professor in the Department of Gastrointestinal Medical Oncology at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Dr. Ng has received her medical degree from Hahnemann University in Philadelphia, which was followed by an internship and residency at Rush Presbyterian in Chicago. And then she went on to complete a fellowship in hematology oncology at the University of Chicago's Medical Center. And then lastly, Dr. Ng is board certified in both internal medicine and medical oncology, which is terrific. So please join me in welcoming her. As you've heard, her expertise is just vast, and we're thrilled that she has spared some of her time with us today to talk about the importance of biomarkers in colorectal cancer. So Dr. Ng, if you just give it a second, I'm going to turn this over to you and let you advance your own slides there. And please, like I said, please join me in welcoming Dr. Kathy Ng.
So I want to thank you, the organizers, for allowing me to participate in this telephone conference. I just want to let people know that I'm a specialist in clinical research in lower GI cancers, and I'm the associate medical director for the Colorectal Center here at MD Anderson. So, Kim, it's not advancing.
How's that?
Let's try again. No.
Still there you not go. Can you see your slides, though?
No. I just see the introductory slides that you provided. Should I have you advance it for me?
Yes. Hang on one.
While you're focusing on that, let me try to.
Yes, go ahead.
So I just want to kind of start off with a generalized discussion regarding colorectal cancer, and then really trying to focus what the difference is between a prognostic marker, a predictive marker. Oh, there we go. And as well as what are some of the tools we can use in order to choose the therapies that are available to our patients currently. So just so you are aware, as of 2014, approximately 136,830 individuals will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer, and that's of all stages. But unfortunately, greater than 50,000 people will still die of this disease in the U.S., and that's despite the fact that colonoscopy is the standard of care for screening. Worldwide, 1.2 million individuals have been diagnosed with colorectal cancer, and unfortunately, half of those individuals will die of this disease. So I just want people to remind themselves that this is a very preventable cancer, and that's why it's very significant. Organizations such as Fight Colorectal Cancer are really trying to get the word out about screening and the importance of trying to get a colonoscopy or some other type of screening modality so the development of polyps can be recognized before they become cancerous. So here, basically, this slide is showing you the developments of treatments over the past 3 decades. And we're really going to be focusing on targeted therapies for most of this discussion, since the talk is about biomarkers and its applicability to making treatment decisions. So we will be focusing primarily on a class of agents called anti-epidermal growth factor receptor antibodies. But this just gives you an idea that with 5-FU alone, which is a standard of care, the median survival is about 6 to 12 months, median survival 10 to 12 months. And then once you add on various chemotherapy agents, including a very common drug known as bevacizumab, to your treatment regimen, your median survival can then improve to as high as 28 months. And some of the newer studies show that your median survival can actually get closer to almost a little less than 3 years. Next slide. And these are the current FDA-approved, what we call anti-VEGF agents, or agents that basically work on blood vessel growth and hopefully prevent a tumor from spreading and metastasizing. Bevacizumab was the first monoclonal antibody approved in the treatment of metastatic colon cancer, and currently it is approved in the front and second line setting. As you can see, it blocks one specific target, which is called VEGF-A. The latest two drugs that have been approved, one is called aflibercept, and that is approved in the second line setting for metastatic colorectal cancer. And you'll see that all of this discussion will be focused on primarily only metastatic disease. The developments in early stage colon cancer have been rather slow regarding biologic agents. A lot of these drugs that are currently approved in the metastatic setting have not been found to be helpful in the earlier stage setting. So that's why we're going to focus primarily on the metastatic setting at this time, where there's more applicability for our discussion. So our aflibercept is approved in the second line setting. I'm sorry, can you go back to the previous slide? And it also targets VEGF-A, B, and something called placental growth factor. And regorafenib is a pill form, an oral agent, that's approved in for patients that have gone through multiple lines of therapy. And it's approved as a single agent by itself, whereas the aflibercept is only approved in combination with irinotecan. Regorafenib, as you can see, targets multiple different receptors, as well as other what we call kinases, and it has barely any activity by itself, but has been known to demonstrate improvement in overall survival, and that's why it's FDA approved. Next slide. So I want to make sure that people understand the difference between a prognostic marker and a predictive marker. So a prognostic marker means that your tumor may have a mutation in it that will tell us whether or not you have a better prognosis or a poor prognosis, but it is independent upon the type of treatment you receive. Whereas a predictive marker can be helpful because it can tell you if you may or may not benefit from a certain drug. It does not guarantee, though, that you will benefit from a drug. Next slide. So currently, in regards to the first class of drugs I talked about regarding the anti-VEGF therapy, where we're talking about blood vessel development and how it works with metastatic disease, there have been no predictive markers identified for those class of drugs. However, we have a second class of drugs called the epidermal growth factor receptor family, where we do have predictive biomarkers as well as a prognostic biomarker that may help inform us if that class of drugs is beneficial to patients. Next slide. So we're going to focus now on some, give you a little bit of background about current molecular markers. Next slide. So KRAS is, the KRAS mutation is one that I think many of you have probably heard about. It impacts about 30 to 50% of all colorectal carcinoma patients, and it's the first universally accepted predictive marker that was recommended to be utilized in the setting of when a doctor is considering the class of drugs anti-EGFR therapy or epidermal growth factor therapy. And we knew that the majority of these mutations occurred in two specific codons, 12 and 13, with codon 61 and 146 being rare codons. So before, when we had testing completed, it was only specifically in codons 12 and 13. And just a reminder here is even if you don't have this mutation and you get this class of drugs, it does not mean you will definitely benefit from therapy. It just tells you you may potentially benefit from that type of therapy. Next slide. So this tells you why it's important to test for this KRAS mutation. So this is a cartoon, and on the left, cartoon A, this is kind of the pathway that's very common without any drug involvement. And cartoon B in the middle here basically shows you what happens when you provide an anti-EGFR inhibitor such as cetuximab or panitumumab. It's supposed to bind that the EGFR, what we call ligand. So it's supposed to bind that green area. And if it does so appropriately, it's supposed to prevent any further activation of the pathways downstream, which are called RAF, MEK, and MAP kinase. What happens is in the presence, and now move on to diagram C, in the presence of the KRAS mutation, which once again can occur in 30 to 50% of our patients, if you utilize this class of drugs, if in the presence of that KRAS mutation, what happens is it doesn't end up blocking those downstream effects, and in fact, those other pathways still get activated. So basically, if you provide a patient anti-EGFR therapy in the presence of the KRAS mutation, it was determined in a clinical trial to be no better than placebo. So it basically negates the benefit of that class of drugs in its work against this pathway. Next slide. One other common mutation that we've also been appreciating is something called the BRAF mutation. And what's important to you is that it's not as common as the KRAS mutation. It only occurs in less than 10% of all colorectal patients. And it is definitely found to be prognostic. So if you have the presence of the BRAF mutation, historically, based upon prior trials, it indicates that you have a poorer prognosis relative to other patients. We also believe it does have a predictive, serves in a predictive role. However, because it's such a rare mutation, we have never had a study that's been large enough to validate what we believe in. But we do suspect that it may also be predictive in this similar class of the EGFR pathway. Next slide. The most recent mutation that's been recognized is also something called the NRAS mutation. It is also a very rare RAS mutation, and it's in less than 5% of all metastatic colorectal carcinoma patients. And as you can see here, the mutations lie in similar spots as the KRAS mutation in codons 12, 13, and 61. It is also mutually exclusive with KRAS as well. Next slide. So why is this important? So it's important because when you're considering this class of drugs, once again, the anti-EGFR inhibitors, you want to try to incorporate some of this new information. So earlier on, we knew you should check for KRAS status, as I mentioned earlier, because if you did have the mutation and received this class of drugs, it was no better than receiving placebo or best supportive care. The BRAF mutation we know results in poorer prognosis of patients, and now we have literature that says that you should also be testing your patients now for this NRAS mutation and potentially other rare mutations, and I'll give you an example here. Next slide. So this is the most recent trial that has been published in 2010 and updated and republished again in a major journal called the New England Journal of Medicine in 2013. And this trial is in patients that had never been exposed to chemotherapy. It was metastatic colorectal cancer patients. And they were basically randomized to a standard chemotherapy regimen of FOLFOX, which is oxaliplatin, and 5-FU, so it's an acronym for that combination of drugs, and that's commonly given every 2 weeks. Or they were also randomized to the addition of one of the EGFR monoclonal antibodies. So instead of cetuximab, as in that cartoon I showed you earlier, this is a sister drug called panitumumab, made by a different pharmaceutical company, but works in a very similar fashion. So panitumumab is also given on an every 2 week or every 3 week basis. For the purpose of this trial, because the chemotherapy is given every 2 weeks, the drug was added on an every 2 week schedule. And the primary endpoint of the study was progression-free survival. That means that we're looking for the time until the tumor grows to a certain extent, and that will tell us how long that drug may benefit you. Next slide. So this is a very large study, and they enrolled almost a little less than 1,200 patients. And the take-home point from this diagram is just to remind you once again that the KRAS mutation is very important to check. So they looked at, they noticed about 50% of individuals can have the KRAS mutation, but that there are other mutations that you may want to consider, and I'll show you a breakdown of what I refer to. Next slide. So what they decided to do, in this trial, you had to be originally KRAS wild type. So you could not have had the mutation, the generalized KRAS mutation to enter the study originally. They then, as I said, they updated their analysis recently, even though the first part of the publication was completed in 2010. And they decided to look at more rare RAS mutations. So what does that mean to you? So at the top of this diagram, you can see that they looked at specifically KRAS in exon 2, codon 12 and 13. As I mentioned to you earlier, that's the most common type of KRAS mutation that we used to check for. But what they then proceeded to do is, as I mentioned earlier, even if you're KRAS wild type, it doesn't mean you're going to respond to this class of drugs, such as cetuximab and panitumumab. So they decided to look at other rare RAS mutations. So, and here they listed all the ones they looked at. That there's two, there's basically two in exon 4 that are also rare RAS mutations in KRAS. They looked at codon 61, which is a rare RAS mutation. And they also looked at NRAS, as I show you here, both in the more common codons, 12 and 13, but also the more rare codons, 61, 117, and also looked at that poor prognostic factor, the BRAF mutation. So basically, they expanded their analysis of tumor tissue. And you may also wonder, is your primary tumor mutation, let's say in the colon or the rectum, is it going to be the same mutation that lies in your liver, let's say, or your lung metastasis? And prior studies have shown that for the most part, greater than 90% of the mutations specifically for KRAS are similar in both the primary tumor of the colon or the lung, as well as the site of metastatic disease that may develop. That doesn't always apply to every type of mutation that we are familiar with, but for the purpose of this lecture, these mutations, KRAS, BRAF, and NRAS, these are commonly the same type of mutations between the primary tumor and the site of metastatic disease. So next slide. So basically, this just shows you how they decide to evaluate the additional RAS mutations further, the more extended analysis. And basically what they noted is that they found an additional 108 patients that had these other rare RAS mutations. And that's all you need to know from this diagram. Next slide. So I told you the original publication was in 2010, and then they updated it further. So cartoon or diagram A, the only thing that you need to note here is that they wanted to focus specifically on progression-free survival, which means basically time until tumor growth. And so the degree that it's not response rate, which is the degree of tumor shrinkage. It's really looking at the time frame from when you start the study until your tumor has been noted to grow a certain amount. You would then come off the study, and then that time frame is what the progression-free survival is. So in diagram A, they basically looked at generalized, just the standard KRAS mutation, and they noted if you had received full FOX or the oxaliplatin-based regimen and panitumumab, you had an additional 1.6-month benefit in progression-free survival. They then went to look at those other rare RAS mutations of those 108 patients that I mentioned to you, where they found that there was additional RAS mutations. And that may occur in about 16% to 17% of patients based upon recent studies that have been completed. So in this setting, if you had an all RAS wild type patient, meaning that you test the patient for all those various rare RAS mutations, including KRAS, and you found that the patient did not have any of those mutations and was considered what we call wild type, meaning lacking those mutations, which is very favorable, your progression-free survival improved further to 10.1 months versus 7.9 months. Diagrams C and D are focused on overall survival of the patient, meaning the day that you've been diagnosed until the day that, unfortunately, the patient may pass away. And so that's called overall survival. And so diagram C, once again, is looking at the very standard KRAS mutation in codons 12 and 13. And they noticed basically a difference here of about 24 months for the full combination versus a little less than 20 months just the standard KRAS mutation. But when you started looking at those other rare RAS mutations and removed all those patients that had any of those mutated and looked at only the all RAS wild type patient population, a big difference in overall survival of almost 6 months here, 26 months versus 20.2 months. Next slide. What's even more interesting to me is if you look at progression-free survival again, and you looked at the patient that specifically had one of those rare RAS mutations, so even though they had the generalized positive KRAS wild type in codons 12 and 13, but had one of those rare RAS mutations identified because the investigators actually looked, the progression-free survival went down dramatically. As I showed you earlier, if you were all RAS wild type, your progression-free survival was about 10 months. Now it goes down to about 7.3 months. And what's even more concerning here is that the investigational arm with the antibody included fared worse than the standard chemotherapy alone arm, indicating that all patients that receive this class of drugs should be tested if you are considering the panitumumab for treatment. So all those other rare RAS mutations should be accounted for as well. Next slide. The same holds true in regards to overall survival. So I showed you earlier a true benefit of 26 months if you did not have any of these rare RAS mutations and you were KRAS wild type. Here, if you received this class of drugs again and had one of those rare RAS mutations, your overall survival reduced from 26 months to 17.1 months. Once again, faring worse than the control arm of just chemotherapy alone, which obviously is concerning to us as physicians because that indicates that if we were to treat you with this class of drugs and you did have one of those rare RAS mutations, it could be detrimental to your overall outcome. Next slide. So once again, I'm just reiterating what I mentioned earlier. About 17% of these patients had these other rare RAS mutations, and patients with RAS mutations are not likely to benefit from anti-EGFR therapy. And once again, we are encouraging people to make sure that they consider testing their patients for these other mutations, if possible, when considering this class of drugs. Next slide. So as many of you know, next slide, the standard of care also includes bevacizumab for many of our patients who are, unless they've had a recent stroke or heart attack or something, and would not be a good candidate otherwise. So this is a very small, what we call phase two, so meaning that it's not, it's basically testing a hypothesis in a specific patient population. So in this case, it was for frontline metastatic colorectal patients who were naive to chemotherapy. And Dr. Schwartzberg basically randomized patients. All patients had to be KRAS wild type again. It's just a standard plain KRAS wild type. And they were randomized to FOLFOX again, so an oxaliplatin-based regimen, to either panitumumab, similar like to the trial I just showed you earlier, or bevacizumab, which is a very standard treatment regimen that we utilize here in the United States. So as you can see here, there's really no difference in progression-free survival, but in regards to overall survival, there was, and this was just recently published just this past month, there was a difference of about 10 months in regards to overall survival. The response rate was about the same, and they even included an idea of what subsequent lines of treatment patients received. Next slide. Now, this is a much smaller study, keep in mind, but it is kind of important because if I were faced with a patient that did not have any of these mutations and was RAS wild type all the way through, and I had the option of considering bevacizumab in combination or an anti-EGFR monoclonal antibody in combination, this suggests that basically those patients fare best if you give them anti-EGFR therapy up front. But please keep in mind this is a much smaller study, and this is not the type of study that we require for FDA registration. That type of study is a phase 3 study, which I will show you what will be presented in an upcoming meeting. So the investigators here decide to, once again, similar to the study I just showed you, look at the more rare RAS mutations again. And he looked at those things I mentioned to you earlier, codons 61, 146, and he also looked at NRAS, and he also looked at BRAF. Okay? So what they then decided, they noted, was that the progression-free survival was improved if you had an all-RAS wild type. So you did not have any of those rare RAS mutations, and the overall survival was also improved if you had no RAS mutations and you had received anti-EGFR therapy. The response rate's about the same, but so this is a more provocative study making us think about potentially sequencing of our treatment. Next slide. So this is a study called FIRE-3, very similar to the prior studies, treatment-naive patients. They had to be KRAS wild type in general, and they were randomized to a standard chemotherapy regimen of irinotecan and 5-FU and leucovorin. We call that FOLFIRI. And then they were then randomized to either receiving cetuximab, which is another monoclonal antibody against EGFR therapy, or bevacizumab. And the primary endpoint here was response rate. So that was the primary focus of this study. This study has only been presented and has not been officially published yet. Next slide. And just take home point from this, the response rate was equivalent in both arms. And that was the primary focus of the study. Next slide. However, they decided also to look at other things that are considered important for a clinical trial, progression-free survival and overall survival. So for progression-free survival, from the time you entered the study until your tumor grew to a certain degree, that time frame, once again, is called progression-free survival. That was found to be equivalent in both arms. Next slide. But in regards to overall survival, they noticed, once again, if you were KRAS wild type and had received the combination with cetuximab, you appear to have an improvement of 3.7 months for overall survival. What's interesting here, though, is if you look at these curves, that yellow curve and the blue curve, or purple curve, does not split until about a little after the 2-year mark, which is commonly the time frame that we're moving on to our third line of treatment if you're a metastatic patient that doesn't go on to surgical resection. Next slide. So they did what I showed you earlier, where they decided to look once again at those other rare RAS mutations. And similar to the PRIME trial, they found 16% of their patients, or 65 patients, actually had one of those rare RAS mutations, in addition to being just standard KRAS wild type. Next slide. And once again, these are those mutations I talked about and where they originate from in regards to their codon, and focusing also on BRAF, which is a poor prognostic marker. Next slide. And very similar to the PRIME trial, but here once again, instead of the control arm just being chemotherapy alone, we have now added bevacizumab to the control arm, which is a much more standard regimen. And you'll see here, if you were all RAS wild type, it is a difference of 7.5 months in regards to overall survival versus at the standard control arm of FOLFIRI and bevacizumab. So once again, this suggests as well that if you are a patient that is KRAS wild type and as well as RAS wild type for all the more rare RAS mutations, you may derive greater benefit from utilizing anti-EGFR therapy upfront as part of your chemotherapy cocktail. Next slide. I just showed this to you here because I find this very interesting. I mentioned to you earlier that the BRAF mutation is a very poor prognostic marker. And here I show you if you are all RAS wild type, your survival is 33.1 months versus the control arm. That was a difference of 7.5 months. In those patients that had one of those rare RAS mutations, I told you that was in 16% of patients or 65 patients. Look at the difference of overall survival. It was reduced to 16.4 months. So once again, if you were to receive cetuximab in the setting of having one of those rare RAS mutations, look how much more reduced your overall survival is. In addition, if you were noted to have the BRAF mutation, which was in about 9% of the patients, your survival was also very poor at about 12 to 14 months, regardless of which arm you went in on. And that's why we say BRAF is a very poor prognostic indicator. Next slide. So this just basically is a summary to inform you that, once again, you really need to think about testing for the other rare RAS mutations, even if you are KRAS wild type, for just the standard codons of 12 and 13. And that actually there's another trial that is a U.S. trial that will be presented at our national meeting in June, which may help to clarify and validate some of these results I mentioned here. Next slide. So I just want to show you there is one setting, though, that I don't recommend that you utilize anti-EGFR therapy up front. These studies I've shown you here are metastatic patients that were not considered surgical resection candidates. I mention this because I'm going to show this study here, which is called the New EPOCH trial, and it was specifically in patients that basically had were believed to have resectable disease already for liver metastasis originating from a colorectal cancer, and they were randomized to receiving, for the large part, most patients received an oxaliplatin platinum-based regimen. They were randomized to receiving chemotherapy up front with FOLFOX, followed by chemotherapy after surgery, or chemotherapy FOLFOX plus cetuximab, then surgery, then the addition of FOLFOX to cetuximab after surgery. And the primary endpoint here was basically progression-free survival. Next slide. And what we noted here is that the study actually had to be closed prematurely because they noticed that there were a lot of events that were negative for the investigational arm. What they noted basically is your progression-free survival was much worse if you had received the addition of cetuximab at 14.1 months versus 20.5 months. So the study was stopped due to predefined futility analysis. We have not seen the final publication. We have only seen the presentation, but obviously this is concerning. And at this time, for any patient with surgically resectable disease, meaning that the surgeon believes you can go to surgery at this time point, but he would like to shrink some of the tumor down. In that setting, we do not recommend any anti-EGFR therapy up front because it may be detrimental to you. But based upon the other trials, you can consider anti-EGFR therapy up front as long as you're not considering a surgical resection from the get-go for your liver metastasis. Next slide. I just show you here that, you know, why did the study fail and why is that such a contrast? Once again, even if you're a KRAS wild type, it doesn't guarantee you that you will benefit from this class of drugs. In this study, they did not look at the other rare RAS mutations, but the difference in progression-free survival was so poor between the investigational arm and the control arm, I highly doubt that even if they tease out those other 16 to 17% of patients that may have those rare RAS mutations, I don't think that we will demonstrate that there is a benefit to this class of drugs in the setting of liver resection-only patients. Next slide. Just so you know, there are other liver-only trials being developed. Next slide. So in Europe, they are looking specifically at patients that are KRAS wild type, and they're going to randomize them to standard chemo or standard chemo plus bevacizumab or standard chemotherapy plus the addition of panitumumab, trying to determine if you are likely KRAS wild type, if you fared better with the use of panitumumab. Next slide. There's another trial that I saw online, but it's not open yet, looking at those patients that are already known to be KRAS mutant, and then you are then just randomizing them to standard chemotherapy plus or minus aflibercept, which I told you earlier is approved in the second-line setting for metastatic colorectal cancer, but it is also a drug, once again, that is believed to work on blood vessel growth and prevention of metastatic, prevention of metastasis, and it basically blocks other ligands that or receptors that bevacizumab does not block. Next slide. So this is a trial that we're all waiting to hear about in June. This is basically a very, very large study of a little over 2,300 patients, and we're going to be focusing on two arms of the study because the third arm was eventually removed from the trial based upon negative results in earlier studies. And we're going to compare, a head-to-head comparison of FOLFOX or FOLFIRI with cetuximab versus bevacizumab. About 70 to 80% of these patients did choose to receive oxaliplatin based upon recommendations from the physician. So it's primarily an oxaliplatin backbone, but I show this to you here because this is a big presentation that is going to be presented at ASCO, and we hope to find those results and see if it validates what's been presented in regards to the FIRE-3 study. Next slide. I want to highlight this also for any patient that has a BRAF mutation. There will be a trial open through SWOG, which is our cooperative group, and it will also be open likely with the other cooperative groups such as ECOG, Akron, and the Alliance, where we're focusing on those patients that have that BRAF mutation, and this will be in the second-line setting. So I mentioned to you earlier, BRAF is a poor prognostic marker, and the overall survival of patients based upon prior data is about 12 to 14 months, regardless of which biologic agent you use. So here we're providing the patient a potential randomization to include vemurafenib, which is a drug specifically FDA approved in melanoma at this time, where the BRAF mutation is present in about 50 to 60% of patients with melanoma. Next slide. So in conclusion, all RAS wild type tumor types may provide more benefit in regards to overall survival if you're considering anti-EGFR therapy, and it can be considered in the frontline setting. Obviously, we understand that many institutions don't have these capabilities to test for all these other rare RAS mutations, and so a lot of institutions do have to send out their specimens, but we are encouraging individuals, physicians, to actually make sure that they test for these other rare RAS mutations, because as I showed you here, even if you have the generalized KRAS wild type and identified, if you also have one of those other rare RAS mutations, it can be detrimental if given this class of drugs. And I believe that is the end of my presentation. So hopefully, you know, once again, we are encouraging you to talk to your physicians about the type of treatment that is available to you. And obviously, if they don't discuss some of this information with you and you've seen this webinar, please make sure you discuss it with them so they are aware of how best that they can help you.
Terrific. Thanks, Dr. Eng. We just can't thank you enough, and I realize that we've already eked an extra 10 minutes out of you. And we do have some questions, and I just want to let folks know to stay tuned because we have gotten all of your questions, and we're going to put a document together that's going to address things like can a patient's KRAS status change? What targeted therapies are available for tumors that have a KRAS mutation? Can chemotherapies that are used in other cancers actually work in colon and rectal cancer. Is there ever a circumstance where drugs like Erbitux and Vectibix would be used in a patient with a KRAS mutation? Is it possible to have like a false positive result to a KRAS test? And the use of MEK inhibitors in colorectal cancer. And then lastly, about testing patients in stage 3 for KRAS wild type or mutation too. So we're going to get to all of those questions. We're going to put a document together, and we're going to send it out to you. But before we let Dr. Eng go, if you could just give us two maybe take-home messages for patients that are walking into an office who have colorectal cancer, what are a couple of good questions that they can ask of their physicians to make sure that they're getting, you know, the best treatment possible?
Yeah. So I think one of the most important things is, number one, you need to make sure that you know that you are familiar with whether or not you have locally advanced disease, which would be like a stage 2 or stage 3 patient, versus someone with metastatic disease, which is a stage 4 patient. You know, for locally advanced disease, there's the role of adjuvant chemotherapy or additional chemotherapy to reduce your risk of recurrence in stage 3. But for a patient with stage 4, it's very important you know what your objectives are as a patient and what your physician's objectives for you are. Whether or not, number one, do you have resectable metastatic disease? And number two, if you don't, make sure he explains to you what that means. What are your goals then in regards to treatment?
Okay, great. So do you have resectable disease, yes or no? And then what are my goals of treatment? And then what are my options? Okay,
yes,
good.
I think it's very important that because I, for me and my patients, I try to give them a very realistic picture of what chemotherapy can and cannot do if you do not have surgically resectable disease. So I think that's very important that everyone's on the same page from the get-go.
Terrific. Okay. Well, on behalf of Dr. Eng and Fight Colorectal Cancer and our supporters of this webinar, Amgen Oncology, we'd like to thank everybody for attending. We realized we were abbreviated, and we realized that you guys still have a lot of questions. And like I said, stay tuned. We will put a document together and make it available on our website and send it out actually to all of our webinar attendees today and get some answers to your questions. So thank you so much, Dr. Eng. Have a great afternoon, and to all of our attendees, have a great afternoon as well.
Thank you.